He's one of the Republican Party's most conservative conservatives, yet he has struck deals and friendships with the Senate's most liberal Democrats. He's been a staunch supporter of the anti-abortion rights movement, but has spoken strongly in favor of stem cell research. Utah Senator Orrin Hatch seldom has followed convention. He's been called a political square peg, a label Hatch proudly has adopted.
They know that a square peg like myself, I don't fit in all the round holes. In other words, I'm a person who recognizes that partisan politics may be important, but I'm going to do what I think is right no matter what.
Square peg also is the name of Orrin Hatch's new book, which is subtitled Confessions of a Citizen Senator. Hatch was elected in 1976, and wherever you find a politically charged debate, you usually find him. Hatch was the ranking Republican on the Senate Judiciary Committee during the confirmation hearings for Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. He voted against a national holiday honoring Martin Luther King, but he's voted in favor of child health care for the working poor and made concessions on gun control to help pass crime legislation. Hatch says he's made a career out of surprising both critics and supporters with his ability to reach a compromise.
I write a lot about how a leading conservative and leading liberals can get together and pass really leading legislation that makes a difference in people's lives. I cite a number of Hatch-Kennedy-Kennedy-Hatch bills, depending upon who's in the majority. But let me just mention one, the child health insurance program. When we came up with that, we made it a little more liberal so Ted could get all the outside groups. I don't think he ever thought we'd really get it done, but he could beat up Republicans for being insensitive and use me as a front man. Finally, I was able to get it through the Senate Finance Committee, and it became the linchpin and the glue that brought the whole balanced budget for the first time in 40 years together. And it wouldn't have happened had not a liberal and a conservative gotten together and done what really now is helping millions of young kids whose parents work but just don't earn enough money to get them health insurance. But, you know, Kennedy and I are called the odd couple.
This is the symbol of liberal politics on Capitol Hill. What's the basis of that friendship?
Well, when I became chairman of the Labor Committee, as the youngest committee chairman in history, I believe, before I got there, there was only one conservative on the whole committee, and his name was Paul Laxalt. He called it purgatory being on that committee. But then, when the Reagan Revolution came in and he got elected, there were seven of us. And there were seven liberals led by Kennedy, and I have to say that Kennedy had the ideological edge, and I knew I couldn't get anything done as chairman without his help. So I went to him, and I said, look, Ted, I can't run this committee without you. I know it, and you know it. And I said, I need your help. And he said, Orrin, there's some things I can't do for you, mainly the unions, you know, the pure political things and so forth. He said, but I will help you. And that's how the Hatch-Kennedy relationship was born.
Do conservatives sometimes see you as a traitor when you do things like support stem cell research, for example?
Well, let's put it this way. When I came out for stem cell, embryonic stem cell research, look, that wasn't an easy decision at first because I spent a year studying it. I'm a great believer in prayer, and I spent a lot of time praying about it because I didn't want to make a bad decision. In the end, it was an easy decision because just think about it. Here is the most promising medical research in history that may lead us to understand or have treatments or cures for cancer, heart disease, Alzheimer's, ALS, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, diabetes. Why wouldn't we want to use those eggs that would have been discarded anyway to help mankind?
Trying to get at the confessions in the subtitle, you do have a confession of sorts here. You regret voting against making Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday a national holiday.
I really do. You know, to me, that was the single greatest mistake I've made in 26 years. I thought, why do we need another holiday? The federal employees have enough holidays. And it would cost $1 billion, which it does, to have that day off. And I was thinking practically, rather than taking into consideration the feelings of millions of people, descendants of despicable slavery, who to them, Martin Luther King was, and to millions of others as well, including me, is a symbol of freedom. And I didn't take all that into consideration like I should have. If it were to happen again, of course I'd vote for it.
As a successful songwriter, do you really need to hold on to your day job?
Well, you know, songwriters don't make a lot of money, but I have to say, I'm coming along. I've had four songs in movies. Gladys Knight's sung two of them. Donny Osmond sung one. Brooks and Dunn have sung, they sang a song on the Olympic commemorative. One of the stories I tell in there is an interesting one because Bono, the great lead singer of U2, comes to see me regularly, and because Bono is very socially conscious. He's an Irishman who wanted to do something about sub-Saharan African debt relief. And I helped him with that, and he wanted to be helped on African AIDS. But finally, after about the third or fourth time he came to see me, he said, "Hey, Senator," he said, "I want to hear your music," you know, in his Irish brogue. And I said, "Well, that'd be great." So I played him two or three songs. He said, "Senator," he said, "those are beautiful." He said, "But the brothers aren't going to sing them." And I said, "Well, why not?" He said, "Because of who you are, I presume, conservative, Republican, Mormon, you know." And I said, "Well, what do I do about that?" He said, "Well, you've got to change your name." And I said, "Well, what should I change my name to?" You know, I'm laughing away. And he said, he gets very contemplative, looks up at the light in the ceiling and puts his hand up over his lips. And then after about, oh, I'd say 15 or 20 seconds, he said, "I've got it," he said. "You should be called Johnny Trapdoor." So if you hear of any music written by Johnny Trapdoor, you're going to have advance notice who actually wrote that song. I took his advice.
Whatever works.
It hadn't worked yet, but...
Now, songwriters have issues, too.
Oh, yeah.
One of the issues out there is the right of the artist to reacquire music from record companies that have recorded it and sit there holding it forever.
And don't do anything with it.
Right.
Well, we've been working on that, because I generally am on the side of the artists, of the writers, of the creative people. Why? Because if you don't have the creative people, if you don't protect them and their rights, if you don't have copyright, then I'll tell you, that wouldn't be long, you wouldn't have music, you wouldn't have books. So it's very important that we keep that side of the business going while not being inappropriate to the other side of the business. There's a lot of interesting stuff in this book that you'll never see anywhere else. I've had political science professors saying I'm going to require my students to read this book because they'll learn more about Washington and more about what goes on, and it'll be fun for them in the process.
And it would be mandatory in Utah.
Well, I think it should be.
Republican Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah, his new book is Square Peg, Confessions of a Citizen Senator. And here's Brooks and Dunn singing a song written by Senator Hatch.